eagle flies high, way up in the sky. It sees above the human eye. A different perspective, a broader directive. In doing so, it becomes more effective. Welcome to The Legal Eagle, a podcast where I examine aspects of the law that I'm passionate about. I'm your host, Sarah Mae Thomas, and my aim is to have conversations that will empower both professionals and the everyday person on the street. Happy New Year and welcome back to the Legal Eagle podcast. I'm so excited to start my new series, Barrister to Barrister. And with me, I have Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hey. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you on the show. So, Denise, I mean, I'm starting this series because I'm interested in hearing real life stories about how lawyers went from law to pursue their passions in coffee. And that's exactly what you did. So you started off as a corporate lawyer.
I was, yeah.
And you studied in London.
Yeah.
And did you work in London as well?
Yeah, so I studied in London and then I practiced at Sherman and Sterling for about 6 years in London and then moved back to the Singapore office as well.
Wow. And you did what is the world's, well, it's known as the world's hardest bar course, the New York bar.
I did that as well.
How did you survive and how was it?
It was pretty relentless.
Yeah.
Also because, you know, as you know, a big part of the format is multiple choice, which is quite hard when it comes to the legal side of things.
Yes.
And I also did it remotely.
Oh my goodness.
So it did require a tremendous amount of self-discipline, which I don't quite have. But we got there in the end.
Got there.
And yeah, it's not something I use a lot these days as a qualification, but it was definitely quite useful when I was practicing.
Wow, amazing. So, I mean, we've got some pretty amazing coffee in front of us. Could you talk me through some of this coffee?
Right. So, I mean, what you have here is just two of our bottled cold brews in black and oat, the other flavor. I mean, these have been pretty popular since the start of Maxi, actually. A lot of our community in our first year of Maxi was a lot of the gyms and fitness studios in the area. So there was, you know, quite just an organic demand for kind of a grab and go coffee fix, especially, you know, before and after coffee shop hours. So we started kind of just, you know, doing these bottled cold brews and it's kind of evolved into a beast in itself with time. I think, well, thanks or no thanks to COVID because everyone wants kind of a home fix.
Yes.
And, you know, cold brews have a longer shelf life as well
versus
an espresso based offering that you should obviously consume as soon as possible. These keep fresh in the fridge for at least a week. So it's something we continue to offer in gyms and our other stockists, but it's been very popular through this period on delivery.
Okay, yeah.
So
wow, and I was cured. Where did that come from?
I think for us, we do feel like, you know, product is one piece of the whole experience. So the coffee within is important, but also, you know, we kind of like to use all our little marketing pieces as also like to have a little storytelling angle. We thought a lot about this kind of design and a cute little tagline that we worked with a very talented graphic designer called Leslie on this little illustration. I was cured all right is actually the last line of a book called The Clockwork Orange, which is a bit geeky, but a literature text that Joy, my partner in Maxi's,
loves.
And we studied this text together at school.
Oh, wow. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Because I've often stopped by and I was like, oh, what is this? I was cured. But your coffee, Denise, is one of the best, I feel, in Singapore. And actually, for listeners, Denise and I actually met in 2019 when I was, I think it was like a rainy morning. I was exhausted from my morning session in court and I just needed a good coffee fix. And I was walking from the state courts back to my office and I stumbled upon your little hole in the wall.
And I think that was before you left to start your own practice.
That's right.
So
it was
actually really, really cool to see you go on that journey as well. I remember you like handing me your card with your
really?
New office.
Yes.
And I was like, well done. This is it's very cool to meet people like on their own journeys as well.
Yeah. But what I loved about the little hole in the wall was like, it was a tiny space, but it was so cool. Like every part of it, I was like, I wish I could just take a picture and just capture it because you had the sign like out of the office or something. I remember and I was like, I really feel like I'm out of the office. And it was just like, you were so cool. Your staff were really cool. And you told me it was like a bar, a speakeasy bar at night.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And now you've expanded during COVID actually.
That's
amazing.
a bit crazy, but yeah. But hey, there you go, right? And then we still have we share the space now with Junior the Pocket Bar, so it's a proper bar space. That's right behind our coffee bar. So yeah.
Okay, so rewinding back to law school.
Yes.
When you were studying law, did you know, I want to start a cafe. I want to go and be a barista.
I guess I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but I did always feel like I wanted to wear a slightly different hat and own something as small a scale as it started off as. I just wanted to wear that ownership hat. And I think a slightly different position in the legal industry, unless of course you run your own business, and that's also something that's, you know, very interesting in itself. I think I just wanted to wear that different hat, and I've always had an interest in the F&B industry, and so, you know, coffee for me seemed like just quite a natural entry point because it's something I was always quite passionate about. I did a few short stints before I started my time at Shearman and in a few of the specialty coffee shops in Singapore as well. And so I think it was just quite a natural progression in some way. Also, of course, as a lawyer, you are highly dependent on
caffeine. On caffeine, yes.
And so it was probably, well, a good way to just supply my own highs. Yeah.
And who doesn't love coffee? We all, and we're the coffee avocado generation. We love our coffee.
There you go.
So talk to us about like how you made that transition from corporate law, which is like pretty dry. I mean, let's put it bluntly, to coffee. Like, was there an aha moment? Did you have like inspirational people? Like, what was that moment for you?
Wow. I think it was a whole confluence of factors, actually. You know, it's always been on my mind. And, you know, in corporate law, of course, you advise a lot of businesses.
Yeah.
And that's honestly what I really enjoyed the most about practice as well, that I got to, you know, in my field of practice, see the ins and outs and the runnings of businesses across different industries. So I think I already knew that I had some ideas of, you know, if I were to do my own thing, you know, the system that I kind of want to build.
Yes.
And then it's when I moved back from London to Singapore, I think that's when you move home. I didn't really expect it, but I think you feel there is a certain sense of familiarity and comfort and the network that you already have, which also makes it, I guess, you know, mentally easier in some ways to just make that leap. Help that I stayed at home, so I don't pay rent.
Yes.
Still don't, so that's a good thing for now. But funnily enough, actually, the spot of the first Maxi, so that little hole in the wall on Club Street, was previously also a little coffee shop called Bicky and Brew.
Ah.
Some of you guys may remember it from years ago. It had like flamingo wallpaper and all that on it.
Ah.
Was actually owned by the Australian
I was going to say Australian, Bicky.
Of course, Australian wife of one of my ex-colleagues at Sherman.
What a small
and
world.
So when they were leaving to go to Bali, to move to Bali for a bit, I was like, what are you going to do with the shop? And then the rest is history.
Oh, wow.
So I think it was just, you know, little cogs in motion. And, and there wasn't the, you know, yes, I'm ready to go. And I feel like sometimes, like, no time is the right time.
Yes.
You will never feel, 1,000% ready.
Yeah. You just sometimes have to take that leap of faith.
Yeah, you take the leap. You kind of fall into things. You get prodded along the way. And then you just figure it out as you go, you know.
Yeah. And did you have to do like any like coffee course, like a barista course?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was, you know, roughly familiar having worked at a specialty coffee shop before I started practicing. Mm. But it's really thanks to my current partner, Joy. The first 2 years, she hadn't joined me in the business yet, but she has a tremendous amount of experience in the specialty coffee industry. So it was many late nights and long hours with her in the shop, kind of getting me up to speed with the systems and kind of just training me up.
Yes.
I also had a wonderful team of people with, you know, a very diverse range of experience in the F&B industry that I could really tap on. And these people were, I mean, the community and the industry in Singapore is quite an amazing one. And it is very, very close-knit. So it made starting off easy.
Easy. Yeah. And I mean, like you would have had all these late night sessions, like studying about how and like learning how to even run a coffee business. Did you have to like find a plantation, like a coffee plantation in South America?
I wish that's the plan.
Yeah.
The plan is to move off to a coffee farm in Colombia at some point.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, as an industry, we are getting closer and closer in terms of this bean to cup thing.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think so far there is still a certain disconnect between, of course, you know, the what you get on the table and that side of operations, like the cafe side of operations versus what's going on in the farms. But of course, there are many leading roasters in the industry, you know, Tim Wendelboe, Manhattan Coffee Roasters. These guys are just working directly now with farms to kind of push flavor profiles, but also processing methods so that everything's a bit more sustainable. Yeah. The farmer gets
more in their pocket.
Exactly. Yeah. Cutting out the various, you know, import-export middlemen in between. And then you also are able to tell that story to the customer. And therefore, I mean, it's a whole ecosystem, right? So I think for us, I mean, it's a big dream, but that's the next step of the equation as well. So we really hope to start our own, now that cafe operations are kind of stable, start going into the roasting game. And then once we get into the roasting game, hopefully creating more direct relationship with certain farms and certain farmers as well. So
amazing. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to how like Maxi just grows from strength to strength. Because I mean, to be absolutely honest, I actually thought in law school that I would be a barista too. Or maybe not the barista, but just my brother is really good at making coffee.
Nice.
So he's a doctor. And so we seriously sat down and we're like, okay, let's pursue our coffee passions. Yeah. And I was more interested in drinking the coffee than I was in making it. So we realized quite quickly that
I'm glad you figured that one out. Yeah. No, it's like me and like, I mean, a bar, I guess. Yeah. I realized I do enjoy having a drink at the bar. Yeah. I don't necessarily want to run a bar.
Bar, exactly. So tell me about like, so from that little hole in the wall to where you are now, what was the journey like and how did COVID affect you? What processes did you need to implement just to reinvent yourself in the season?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, good question. And it's quite a topical one for most businesses in the industry right now. Quite sadly, we were closing on the, towards the end of our lease when the first, seems like a lifetime ago, but the time and time is kind of blurred in this period, right?
I know.
The first circuit breaker started, which was, I mean, for me, it was quite sad because I didn't really get to say a proper goodbye to that space or, you know, do something with our customers and our amazing community. But I think that gave me an added drive to look for a space, an equivalent or bigger space in the same neighborhood because I so enjoyed the community and the connections there. And I think, you know, coffee, unlike other products in the F&B industry, really your immediate community becomes your ecosystem because I think whereas, you know, if you made a dinner reservation somewhere, there's that intentionality to travel there. Whereas for coffee, it's more, you know, it has to be kind of on my way to work. So that natural organic community that's based on geographic convenience as one of the primary factors, it really does build your community. So I really wanted to stay in that.
It's a fantastic area. I love that whole area. It's a nice vibe.
It's a great vibe. We have amazing neighbors, wonderful community. And then I guess as luck would have it, we also found out that Junior the Pocket Bar was looking at a similar space, except they wanted to be hidden behind and not have the frontage, whereas we only wanted the frontage. And I was like, okay,
perfect.
Perfect marriage of convenience. Yeah. It's been a wonderful partnership in many, many ways.
Wonderful.
A lot of synergies between our communities. But of course, you know, things like COVID obviously delayed the construction process. Mm. And then once we were open, it has been, you know, just a series of restrictions, right? So I think the uncertainty, you know, with timings of news and, you know, when restrictions will be lifted or if they will continue, that's kind of put a spanner in the works in terms of how we can plan for things and plan for expansion and all that as well. Yeah. But we like to look on the bright side.
Yes, and, you know, always on the bright side.
Every crisis kind of brings opportunities, right?
Absolutely.
So A, obviously opportunities to bring the community closer. And we've been very overwhelmed by a great outpouring of support from our community. Mm. Even regulars that, you know, work from home now and don't really have to come into the office, they take the drive, you know, in their car from the East Coast to just come and get a cup of coffee in the mornings and head back home. And it's just...
That's fantastic.
You know, these things are heartwarming and it becomes your why, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, this is why...
I do what
I'm doing and I want to be better as well. But, and I think as a business and most of the restaurant industry, I guess, is similar where you're essentially a brick and mortar kind of business.
Yes.
I think, of course, everyone has been kind of forced to pivot to delivery, other kind of online revenue streams. Mm. So it's forced us to get creative that way, but we still feel that the heart of our business is going to be a brick and mortar shop.
Yeah.
That's where you get the human connection.
Yes.
But it obviously has been great for us to build a strong kind of online delivery platform, yes. Roll out cold brews, and in this period, kind of the full delivery, full cafe menu on delivery as well, wow. Which kind of gives a chance as well for, you know, other parts, other people outside of our
community to hear about you guys.
Yeah, exactly. And, and to try it as well.
Yeah.
And also the chance for collaboration, right?
Yes. So
to get together with partners in the neighborhood to, you know, do bundles, collaborations, yes. little things on delivery that we wouldn't normally have done.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Wow. Necessity is the mother of all invention is what I say.
That is true.
I mean, it's true. Businesses, I think during COVID, the way to stay current is to reinvent or to move forward and to think of creative ways to move forward without losing the character of the company. I think that's quite critical. I mean, that's been the hardest challenge for me as well with my business. So what advice would be for you? I mean, for people who are thinking, Denise, I want to start a cafe or I want to start any business.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Not right now.
Really? Don't do it? Well, basically, you know, what advice do you have for these people, whether it's a cafe or another business?
I think always... or be very sure of your why.
Yeah.
Because that is the one thing that will keep you anchored and that you have to come back to regardless of whatever uncertainty in circumstances, whatever it is that life throws at you.
Yeah.
If you're so sure of, you know, why you're doing what you're doing, what you set out to achieve.
Yeah.
I think that will keep you in good stead.
And did you ever have any obstacles being a woman in business?
I think not particularly. I feel like actually, you know, it's quite a
equal playing field.
Equal playing field in the industry. In fact, I guess by virtue of the fact that Joy and I are both females, have more females in the business. Mm. I think it'd be stereotyping to say that females are more emotional, but I am more emotional. Yeah. And I feel like sometimes, you know, there is that slight pitfall, right? You're running your own business, so A, already you care so much about it. Plus emotional, sometimes one might let emotions get in the way. And I used to, or at least, and also, I mean, I'm in partnership with one of my best friends. So that's doubly complex.
Yes.
And people would always, you know, say, oh, just make sure you don't get your emotions in the way.
Yeah.
But actually for me, I think I just need to, I would say, you know, just be very aware of and understand your emotions and actually understand how you can use that as a powerful tool to build even stronger and even more meaningful connections.
Because,
you know, this is where, what is going to be ultimately that drive
Absolutely.
To bring your business and your brand and relationships even further.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. I love that. I feel like I need to write that down because I am also sometimes a bit of an emotional, and I mean, it's personality driven. I don't think it's necessarily gender specific, but I think that when you use what some people perceive as a negative, actually an asset, and use it to kind of propel you further. But having boundaries,
boundaries
are so important.
Exactly.
Emotional boundaries, physical boundaries, all of that.
We could go in a full podcast on that.
Yeah, just on boundaries. So my particular experience is of a young female lawyer, and I felt that I had some kind of prejudices, maybe more because of my age rather than the fact that I was a female, because in the legal industry you have 50-50.
Exactly.
So being a young person starting a business in a country where entrepreneurship is not really encouraged, maybe in the sector that I am practicing in. Did you feel that was the same for you? Like, did you feel like when you said, oh, I'm starting my own company, did you feel like people were telling you like, oh, you're too young?
Yeah.
You can't do it.
I would actually love to hear from you because I'm trying to put myself in your shoes and having previously been practicing as well. And it's you are definitely, you know, in the minority in terms of age, you know, gender. So tell me your advice in a bit. I think for me, to be very honest, I think the biggest chip on my shoulder would be that I was making a very significant career switch.
Yes.
And I had almost zero experience in the restaurant industry. But yet, at the same time, I was meant to be the boss. And so how do you strike the balance, right? How do I try to lead and also be an effective and good leader? Yet at the same time, I mean, half the time at the start, I was like, I have no
idea. What am I doing?
What I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I woke up every day being like, what am I actually doing? And I questioned myself every time I gave direction in a certain way. But I feel like firstly, you know, confidence comes from your why, and also what you have learned in the legal industry actually sets you up in terms of soft skills really, really well for many other aspects of running the business. And then when it comes to the operational side of things, which honestly, I am just working on to get better in every day, you know, humility is key.
Yeah.
And really just leaving your ego at home and just learn, just wanting to learn every day from every single person that you meet.
Yeah.
So that's something so that I tell myself every day as well.
Yeah. I mean, because law is not notoriously known for being humble. And I think that even because I practice law, and I think humility is so important to just say like, teach me, I want to learn. And that's how you grow. You just think I've made it, I know everything. That's when you stay stagnant. Yeah. And that's, I think, part of innovation. That's how you grow, how you propel your business. To just keep learning from everyone, because everyone's
right. And I mean, thinking out of the box, right? Like thinking about what you yourself bring to the table. I mean, even I guess starting a podcast series like this, right? Like these are little things that show your character and add to your offering as well.
Yeah.
And might not have been, you know, what's in the script. It's not like, you know, start your own firm, start a podcast, whatever, right? But these are things that you're unique experience and your combination of experiences has brought to the table.
Absolutely.
So I'd say, you know, hold on to that authenticity while staying humble and wanting to grow and learn.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. Thank you so much, Denise.
It's been
a great chat. For listeners, be sure to follow Maxi Coffee Bar on Instagram at maxi.coffeebar and our page, of course, at Sarah Mae Thomas LLC. And like, share, and subscribe. Thinking of a nice cup of brewed coffee, stop by at Maxi Coffee Bar. You're at 6.
Anxiang Hill.
Okay, great. Thank you everyone for listening. And I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Share this episode because we're going to be interviewing some really interesting baristas who have come from the law industry. So stay tuned. Have a lovely day. Bye.